When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I am Francisca George, and I'm a friend of the show.
Perfect. Thanks.
You cut the good part. Anyway, hello, guys. This is kind of a Last Ball Drops thing. I don't know why me and John are on screen right now. I do not have a clue. But anyway, Vansh is also on screen. Hello, Vansh.
Hello, David.
I remember one of our regulars, Jake, said that like the next time he sees a Last Ball Drops show, he's like just going to be ecstatic or something. So I hope he's here today because it's technically a Last Ball Drops show. I mean, literally, Kepfer and Carbajez Baena finished like 5 minutes ago, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't maybe as dramatic as the finish from yesterday, Mute Shang, but it definitely had its merits. I mean, 5-1 in the deciding set tiebreak. Dominik Kepfer was, and then he loses the next 6 points. But yeah, you just don't steal much of the tournament from Mute Shang. Anyway, where do you want to start? You know, are we talking about the women first? Are we talking about the men first?
While we're on the men, let's just go ahead and talk about some of the action earlier in the day. You know, we had the day start off with Felix winning the match against Nishioka. Do you think this is a good chance for Felix to maybe get something going, you know, in his 2024? Oftentimes he's been running up against a lot of top 5, top 10 players earlier in tournaments. Now he has Manarino next, which is a good chance for him.
Yeah, I was just going to say that basically I was going to make this joke that I thought we were going to start talking about relevant storylines and relevant players. But yeah, honest with you, when looking at the first few matches that we had today, most of them are like this. We're like, yeah, sure, Felix is a thing, but is he actually going to be a player in this draw who really shakes things up? I get what you mean, but I do see this Dimitrov-Menshik third round sort of looming for him. And that's probably where I think Felix is going to exit. But yeah, I mean, Madrid is not a bad event for him in general. Definitely not. And Nishioka is someone he should be putting away on clay. I know that he didn't do that, 2020 Roland Garros. But yeah, I mean, it's not like he's been very poor this year, right? He's like just kind of mediocre, average, and he's continuing in that vein. But yeah, you're right that Manarino in the second round is kind of exactly the seed everyone wanted to draw, given I think the Frenchman is at about, 22-23% win rate on the main tour on clay.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess that'll be something for him on Saturday. But what are some of the other matches? I guess we talked about it yesterday, the two that really stood out, Medvedev and Kovacevic, you know? Medvedev taking it in the third after losing the first set 6-4. So, you know, what are your thoughts on Hamad now, you know, looking to get his season on track after winning Next Gen last year?
Man, I hope that he's going to do it. I hope that he just doesn't care that he missed like 4 months and he like breaks into the top 100 right away soon, because like the guy's just too good, you know? I wish I saw more of that match. That actually kind of came in a window where I was a little busy. So I saw, most of the first set and then just bits of the second and third. But yeah, I mean, the serving was obviously absurd. This is the kind of weaponry that I think if he brings out against Tsitsipas in the third round, like he's going to give as much, like in terms of issues on return, he can give Tsitsipas issues here on return, even against the one-hander, even though it's clay. And like Kova was kind of a similar opponent in a way, in that, you know, sometimes his backhand return just doesn't work. Sometimes he tunes in that like during the match, and it's actually gonna be okay. He slices a lot of balls and like neutralizes stuff. So in that way, I guess he's different from Tsitsipas. But I really can't imagine Medvedev just going out against Steph in the third round and hitting 20 aces. But yeah, I mean, it's his first event back healthy, so I do have this fitness doubt in my mind. But hopefully, because this event is like, you know, one day off and stuff, maybe he can recover. And I mean, he's gonna play Lehechka, so I don't know, is it like a 50-50?
Seems like it, right? They played once before in Astana, and he beat Lehechka in the tournament.
I forgot about that.
I think it was,
that was a pretty clean win, right? Like that was
3-4. It was pretty decisive, I remember. So yeah, that should be a good one. And I think we were talking about it yesterday, that either of those opponents will be a challenge that Steph definitely has to get through, because Lehechka, we saw what he did to Steph in Indian Wells, and obviously with the clay underneath his feet, you know, it could be different, but neither of those opponents are comfortable, especially in the altitude, fast conditions.
We still don't know how much like that Barcelona Monte Carlo double, almost double, I guess, for both Rude and Tsitsipas will impact their chances in Madrid. Like, I think that's something we are still learning, because Madrid and Rome, of course, have only been, it's basically the second time that they're 2-week events. So we haven't really had anyone go deep in both of these and then have to play Madrid, not right away, because you start as a seed on Friday or Saturday, but like, yeah, we haven't seen that yet, really. So I guess that's also something that remains to be tested. But yeah, Medvedev or Lehechka, definitely one of the keys there. And I guess, one of the trickiest opponents that Tsitsipas can face there. And what was the other match that you wanted to mention?
The other one was, João Fonseca versus Alex Mikkelsen. You know, because, Fonseca, the prodigy. We should talk about him, as John was saying before we got on this live stream.
Yeah, thankfully no Ghosty in the chat yet, so he can't scream at us yet. But indeed, any moment, I mean, there was a brief scare there, right? I mean, Fonseca comes out, he loses the first four games. But I guess after that, he was just like straight up dominating. Even the end of the first set, like Mikkelsen somehow gets over the line. And after that, it's just, such a dominant performance. Where do you think that, you know, Alex Mikkelsen can go sort of on clay courts? Because, well, obviously he's just learning the ropes, but I remember last year he was doing very well on green clay. I know it's, it has nothing to do with what we're seeing here, but I guess I was expecting something more, just by a tiny bit at least.
Yeah, it did leave me a tiny bit desired. You know, I did think the last two sets were very dominant for Fonseca, especially actually, I would say, the beginning of the third, there were some close games in there, when he held for 4-1, you knew it was kind of done. But Mikkelsen still has a pretty big game, like with the serve and the ground strokes. And obviously he can be a little bit crafty, and he's a little bit Brooksby-ish sometimes in the way that he, deceptively will go for a backhand slice or drop shot. And so he has some good combinations there, but right now I'm not expecting much from him this clay season, especially in Rome and Roland Garros. I kind of just think, if he can win a couple of rounds, or maybe even win one round and then play a seed or something, that would be a good enough result for him at this point.
Yeah, he did. I mean, when it comes to Fonseca, he did kind of save this day, I think, in a way that, a lot of people often are complaining about like the first 2 days of these 2-week Masters when the seeds aren't playing yet. And when looking at the slate that we had today, like we really didn't have any memorable matches on the men's side for the most part, or like any huge narratives. So like anytime we see Fonseca playing on the court right now, like that's usually always a story, like regardless if he wins or loses, and that's great. Obviously, he's doing a lot of winning this year, but even if he lost to Mikkelsen, it would have been something we talk about. It would have been something that people, start discussing. And obviously, if he lost this match, there would have been a lot of overreaction on Twitter as well.
Oh yeah, for sure, dude. Like honestly, this, yeah, like you're so right about them, him like saving the day, because I honestly think any Fonseca match, you have to watch it right now, because this is sort of the early growth stage that, yeah, I mean, any Fonseca and Menchik for that matter, those are much
Menchik as well. Yeah, Menchik beat Hanfman today, first match back after some sort of injury as well. Again, I'm not sure how he's doing, because I actually didn't watch the match, even though it's a must watch. Yeah,
I missed it because of the time zone thing, but yeah, it was, you know, I kind of thought he would come through it, but I was a little bit not sure because of the injury. And
I was like, yeah, I still believe you, because, well, if you show up and you're healthy, you're probably gonna beat Hanfman in the form that Yannick is in right now. But all in all, I mean, Menchik Dimitrov, second round. Grigor hasn't lost an opening round match in ages. This year, he's winning two matches at every event he plays. He hasn't lost an opening round match since losing to Zverev in Cincinnati, which is half a year. And also, it was Zverev in Cincinnati. So, you know, he got Zverev in the first round. Here, he gets Menchik.
And I think he was coming off of a back injury, having missed Toronto. So, there was some...
Yes, as well, yeah. But, like, he was losing to Zverev time and time again that week. Yeah. So, you know, it probably would have happened earlier
if it wasn't for that matchup over and over. So,
yeah. Kinda, yeah, yeah. And in general, because he was drawing a lot of top 10, top 5 guys at the beginning of the season as well, he was already in good form. But, like, he needed to start beating them in order to get there. But, like, yeah, this is the moment when this streak might come to an end. Like, Dimitrov-Menchik, that's going to be a massive clash. And that's, like, I'm just not willing to write off Jakub Menchik in any match he plays at the moment.
Fair, yeah, for sure. I mean, Mahach also took out Rusevori today. Rusevori, of course, not quite been the same since, you know, Hong Kong, Australian Open. Yeah, he's also had some injury concerns lately, but are you excited for Mahach Shelton in the next round?
Yeah, seems like a great match, and I do think that both of them can have a great shot to, like, go very far in this draw, because then you have Bublik Karpajs-Baena for either of them, and that's a great chance. And also then this is the Medvedev section, who I think is slightly vulnerable. So yeah, I mean, Mahach Shelton seems like a 50-50 to me. I do think that Mahach, when it comes to his main tour achievements, he's probably going to be at his weakest on clay. But then again, this is Madrid. It's not like he's weak on clay in general, right? I mean, I just think that, you know, he's probably not going to be as dangerous as indoors or like a quicker hard court. But still, I mean, he's going to get good results. We, you know, he hasn't really played these events yet. Obviously, this is his first, like, proper main tour year. Very excited to check out how he looks against Shelton, who also is a bit of an enigma here. I mean, he won Houston, obviously, but this year he's actually going for, like, a much more, toned down clay schedule. And we'll also have to see how that works out for him. At least on paper, Madrid should be good, right?
Yeah, and last year his loss aged well to Struff, and he was a few points away from potentially winning that one. So,
and he hit the shot of the year.
Yeah, that's right. But any other sort of standout results on the men's side? I mean, Zhang lost out quite comfortably to Kecmanovic. You know, this was sort of a venue I was hoping would bring back some of those good memories for the Chinese Triple Z. And he could, I thought this was a winnable maybe sort of match for him. I knew he wasn't likely the favorite, but I still thought, you know, I was just hoping for something more.
Yeah, that's definitely a match that we should be mentioning. Yeah, I'm disappointed it was a 3-6-2-6. I don't know if I was expecting more, but I mean, the guy is just so hot and cold, right? That he can turn it on anytime. The fact that he recently lost to, like, Vanash and something, like, it doesn't need to mean much. Mm. But yeah, clearly that was not a great match from him today. And I don't think it's getting, like, quite worrisome for him yet. I mean, he's around, like, what, 55 in the rankings or something like that. Still kind of expected to maybe have a few of these random picks every season. But if we were hoping that he was going to, like, I don't know, take it up a level or something, he definitely hasn't done that yet in 2024. For example, I just checked where he is in the ATP race. And a person who has one more point than Zhijian Zhang is João Fonseca, which kind of, you know, tells you something, right?
It tells you everything.
Yeah, Fonseca sort of going through every single level possible, and yet he already has one more point than Zhijian Zhang. So, yeah, it's really not been an amazing campaign for the Chinese, but of course it is quite open for him to still like finish the 100 and stuff. Just, yeah, just doesn't seem like he's been going up a gear. Then again, like until Madrid last year, he was also in trouble, right? So
yeah,
again, he can turn it on. Just a shame maybe that we're not going to get that Rude Zhang match, because Kecmanovic Rude doesn't quite have the same ring to it, or like doesn't quite carry the same upset potential, I think.
Yeah, although they're very good friends. They played the Estoril final, I think, last year against each other.
Which so was not competitive. I'm just saying, you know.
Right. Yeah. So that's definitely a match you would expect Rude to win, regardless of how one-sided it was today against Zhang.
I would agree with that. Obviously, we also need to mention Rafael Nadal, who beat Darwin Blanche. Speaking of overreaction, there's definitely going to be a lot of overreactions after this one. Regardless of where you look, I mean, I was talking to my dad on the phone actually like 3 hours ago maybe, basically he started saying, oh, I was watching some tennis today and you know, Nadal looked pretty good, and I'm like, and I had to like sort of tell him, did you see him serving like Łukasz Kubot last year? What did he do exactly? I mean, do you think Darwin would have won a match against anyone in the draw? And no. My dad said, probably not, actually.
Yeah, I saw a lot of opinions about wildcards, mostly on Twitter after this match. You know, why was he a player outside the top 1,000, 16 years of age, being given this opportunity? Like, should we even have wild cards in 1,000? Should they go to former players, number ones, major champions? Should they go to, you know, because clearly, I mean, he is like the most touted prospect right now in the States, at least given his results in the juniors last year. And of course he does have potential, but yeah, I don't know, this one, there really wasn't much. There was just no competitiveness, zero, none whatsoever. It was just, it was as one-sided as the score looks, and it was,
yeah. Personally, I think that he probably would have gotten more, and that goes for like both Miami and Madrid. He would have gotten more out of Qualy's wildcards.
Yeah,
and that's like, if you're gonna give him these wildcards because you wanna like, yeah, just grant him chances to get experience and like make him a better player in the future, I think he actually would have gotten more out of the qualifying.
Yeah,
and that's kind of something that IMG tournament organizers have to think about. Other wildcards, some of them, Fonseca, kind of like no brainer. Zizou Bergs, I mean, IMG player for years, sure. He was very tired after Tallahassee and Sarasota, but like, sure. Who else was there? Shang gets a ton of wildcards, but again, IMG for years and clearly a super talented player. And I'm lacking someone. Ah, Landaluce. I mean, I saw people complaining about the Landaluce wildcard, for example. And that's sick to me. Like, you know, on the one hand, you've got everyone saying that they should be going to the most talented players from the country of the event. And then you give a wildcard to the most talented young player from the country of the event, who's also IMG. So, like, you know, he has the combo. And people are complaining about that. So, like, if Landaluce is kind of like the best of both worlds, I mean, he's a perfect example of a wild card.
And he sort of proved it in Miami, right? But
very good shot. He won a match. He played decent against Ben Shelton as well. Yeah, right. So like Landaluce definitely is not to be complained about. I think that only Darwin Blanche is controversial.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I agree with you, also qualifying wild card would have helped him out a lot more as far as development. But moving on, in terms of other notable men's results, anything really standard? I mean, we had Caboli come from a set down and beat Tabilo, who's been having a very good year. So clearly, you know, I think we were saying last week that the faster conditions definitely help Kabuli a little bit more.
Yeah, for Tabilov, right?
Yeah. But that's really kind of a match that could have more or less gone either way. So,
yeah. I hope he doesn't play Nadal. I hope he doesn't play Nadal this event because,
yes. Yeah.
That performance was rough.
42 unforced errors or something. And yeah.
I don't remember, but it did feel like it for sure. We should mention one of the heroes of the day, and not the guy on the screen, although the guy on the screen is very important because he might beat Daniil Medvedev in the second round and then he becomes uber important, and he did play very well today. But there's also Pedro Cachin breaking his 15 match losing streak.
Yeah,
holy hell, that was a saga.
My gosh, when was the last time he won a match? Like
October 2023. That was the Shenzhen Challenger. He made the semifinals there. I think he lost to Kova, so Kovacevic ruined him completely.
And then... wow. And so he gets to play Tiafo again, right? Who he beat last year at this tournament. So
right. Altitude, very good for him. To be honest with you, he had to do nothing today. Like, Offner was, I think, sick or something like that. Like, he was really disinterested from start to finish. And, I mean, Sebastian Offner can be like that sometimes. But still, like, you could see that it's a lot of relief. This tweet from Jose, I was actually laughing about it earlier because I just imagined the situation where, you know, this woman in the catching box is, like, almost crying. And Jose is just standing there and taking her photo. or these guys, I mean, they are, you know, happy. And then suddenly there's this one guy just standing there. I saw Jose as well on the broadcast, by the way, today. What was the match that I was doing the watch along on? Ah, Osaka Samsonova. And you could see him in one. I don't remember. I think it was like a view of someone preparing to serve already. And he was there in the background. But anyway, that's kind of off topic. But yeah, just definitely an amazing feeling for Cachin to win a match again. And to be honest with you, like last year going into Madrid, of course he was doing much better and he already had a run at the Challenger in Madrid. But yeah, I mean, he also started the year like 0-something. It was like 0-6, not 0-11 like this year, but it's possible.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's about it for the men's side. Really, I'm pretty excited about tomorrow's matches. I think they should deliver a lot more excitement.
Again, that's when the seeds come into play, right? But I think we'll get to that at the end, right? Like we'll just get to like the preview at the end. So let's just talk about the women now, where we already had seeds, of course. Though the women are a day ahead.
Yeah, and of course we had Swiatek come through pretty comfortably against Wang. I mean, there was like a 3-game patch in there in the second set where it got a lot more competitive, maybe a little bit, but yeah, mostly Swiatek through without any much problem against Wang.
Yeah, Nurlan, I know that Sworna in the chat said that Nurlan was partially correct, but
yeah, I would need to see at least a 7-5, 7-6, some more jeopardy, but yeah.
Also, Nurlan said that she was going to struggle with Ziyu's serve a lot. And Ziyu won 42% of her first serve points. So I don't think that's a win for Nurlan.
No, unfortunately not for him. But I'll tell you who is doing a lot of winning right now. It's Sloane Stephens. Because she's backed up her very good week in Rouen. And she's won a couple of matches here. And of course, we know clay is her most preferred surface. That accentuates a lot of her strengths. And yeah, this is some really good tennis from her right now.
good attempt. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Sloane today against Elise Mertens, wasn't really sure what she was going to do there, but it was an important one to sort of like keep up the streak. Definitely an opponent she can be beating. And truth be told, I mean, that third round against Sakkari looks very, very nice. Tough to pick a favorite even right now, I would say. Like, I know that Sakkari is playing well and, you know, really good shape, but is she that much better than Stephens? Where if we're talking about like peak game, I don't think so. If she's even better, so yeah, that actually looks like one of the matches of the third round now because of what Sloane did last week and also how she's been handling it in Madrid so far.
Yeah, and of course the first round was very dangerous for her, 3 hours and 16 minutes against Trevisan.
She so, kind of made it dangerous though, right? Like she was like 6-3, 5-3 up, I think, and then missed a match point or maybe two. And so like it could have been much cleaner.
Yeah. And of course, Sakari, you mentioned, got to the semis here last year. I mean, this and Indian Wells seem to be some of her best tournaments where she tends to go on runs. So this match is definitely going to be one to watch because she took out Vekic today very comfortably. A match I didn't get to see, but obviously the score looks pretty one-sided there. And I saw some tweets, yeah, like John on the screen that, you know, it was as comfortable as the scoreline suggests. So yeah, maybe this is some of Sakari's best tennis in 3 years. We'll see if she can really, you know, win another title again, get back to another big final. But this is some really encouraging, like, I guess we've seen it now 4 tournaments in a row. If you want to include Charleston semis, Miami quarters, Indian Wells finals. So yeah, some much needed results because it felt like she was kind of in a bit of a lost phase in her career, even though she won Guadalajara. So this is good for the Greek.
Yeah, absolutely. We also had some good moments for the British supporters of Emma Raducanu, who after today can say, look, Maria Carla is actually an amazing competitor here. And she gets the third round over Veronika Kudermetova. I remember someone in the chat actually saying that Kudermetova was their finalist pick. So yeah, that's a pretty brutal exit. But well, her form was... poor going into the event, so probably the expectation in a way. There's a question from Swarna. He wrote, different conditions in Indian Wells and Madrid. Why does Sakari play well at these venues? Oh, it was you, yeah. But I guess you were aware that, you know, Kudermetova is not really in good form, so it was like kind of, yeah, she's done well here before. Maybe she turns it around. Well, clearly she didn't, but I did not watch the match against Carla. And yeah, there's a question from Swarna as well that Indian Wells and Madrid have very different conditions. Why does Sakari play well at these venues?
Yeah, I mean, they're both conditions where the ball travels pretty fast through the air. There's a little bit of altitude in Indian Wells, obviously more in Madrid, but, you know, Indian Wells has more of a thin desert air altitude here. It's just the ball travels very fast. And I also think it probably sets her forehand shoulder height really nicely, you know, where she can really take the ball early on the rise. It sort of favors players like that who have a good kick serve and who have a good strong plus one. And yeah, she can hit through these courts. And yeah, and so there's some similarities there. Obviously, there's differences as well, where Indian Wells is actually slows down a lot once it actually bounces. But, you know, in terms of flying through the air, they're both pretty quick. And especially during the day, actually.
Here it also slows down when it bounces, right? I mean, here the bounce is also pretty clayish. Like, if we, like, especially right now when I'm watching this compared to Stuttgart, like, it's pretty hard to say which one is faster. I mean, probably it's Madrid, but like,
it's also cooler this year, right? Like, the temperatures are really down this year. So it's like sort of colder, and you have to hit.
And you can see that the bounce is like really clay, you know, it's nowhere near the slick, fairly low bouncing Stuttgart that we had last week. It actually makes me think that Świątek might be in with a great chance for the title. Just seeing the you know, the way the ball bounces here is it's going to be much tougher, I think, for someone to like hit her off the court the way that Rybakina was able to in Stuttgart. Probably easier for her to control her own game as well than it was against Mertens or Raducanu. But of course, like, if she faces Rybakina, you know, I'm not saying I'm going to be very confident in an Iga win. I'm just saying it's going to be very tough for someone to just come out and maybe kind of from like the third tier, fourth tier, defeat her. Coco Gauff won with a double bagel. I'm not actually sure when we had the last double bagel on the WTA Tour, but obviously it's not like a
very common. Sabalenka versus Serenko, Australian Open.
Oh, yeah. That's actually pretty... fresh still. I think usually the gaps are a bit larger, although on the WTA Tour I'm pretty sure double bagels happen more often. So yeah, I guess it's just not a test really. Is there anything we can take out of this win for Coco?
If Coco wins her next match, which is against, who does she play actually next? I haven't checked.
I will check now. Diana Jastremska.
Okay, yeah. But, you know, Jastremska, since the Australian Open, right, hasn't really gotten any notable wins that I can remember.
Yeah, I mean, Jastremska was pretty horrible today, but then again, I mean, she fought through it and like, maybe, I mean, she can definitely just turn it on randomly. Sure.
Yeah. Obviously, we had two notable results that I do want to talk about. So Rebus Tormo beating Alina Svitolina, 3-5. Is that surprising? Is that noteworthy?
I remember talking about this on the watch along that I did earlier today, that like usually it would be, but the last few months from Alina have been slightly disappointing. Like, you know, she just hasn't pushed on into being like this proper back to like big title threat type of player. So in that sense, it's not, because I feel like it's kind of not anymore.
Yeah, because it's a shame, because Australian Open, she was playing some really good tennis. And she also got to the final in Auckland where she really pushed Goff in that final, 6-4 in the third. But ever since that back injury where she wasn't really able to show what she got against Nashkova, I think that was really unfortunate for her. It really broke some very good momentum also from the previous season. So, yeah, it's kind of...
And the draw was opening up so much.
Yeah, and I remember that time we were kind of thinking, okay, one of Azarenka or Svitolina has a very good chance to get to the final. And also Zhang as well, which ended up happening. But
yeah, they were the three main favorites, I remember, yeah.
But yeah, and then of course we also had Osaka versus Samsonova, which I think you called actually, right? So
yeah, I did the match. To be honest with you, I was a little disappointed because, well, I actually hadn't watched Naomi play on clay in 2 years. Which might sound weird, but, you know, she didn't play in 2023. And this was her third match this season after beating Minen, of course, and losing to Trevisan in Rouen. And I was just surprised how weak her clay movement still is. Like, you know, Samsonova comes out and for a set and a half, she just blasts every single ball, like, deep into Osaka's forehand corner. And there's no way for Naomi to recover in any of these points, really. Samsonova also had these few blitzed backhands down the line, which, like, yeah, Osaka doesn't even move to. And that's, I mean, obviously there's a good fight there, although the last four games of the second set from Samsonova were criminal. And third set was pretty hilarious too. I mean, it wasn't pretty tennis. It was really just a combination of double faults, serve botting, and early errors in the points mostly. But like, especially when Samsonova started drop-shotting every other point, that was pretty hilarious too. And I think her accuracy was like 95% or something like that. I mean, she probably didn't play 20, but let's say 90%. Because again, for most of them, Osaka didn't even flinch. So it's just a pretty brutal match, I think, for her in terms of showing that, well, in, you know, winning big titles on clay seems as far as ever, really. For her, and I just think that she needs to somehow get through the clay season, hopefully for her, win at least a match in most of the events that she plays, and just try not to lose any momentum going into the rest, right? I don't know how good she can be on grass. I mean, probably better than clay, although it was never her favorite surface anyway. But yeah, it's just a tricky moment of the season for her, for sure, because she wants to get back to where she was, but it's not the perfect moment to do it.
Yeah, very much so. Although 2019, I do seem to remember making some traction, like getting to the semis of Stuttgart, quarters, I think, in both Rome.
Quarters in Madrid, yeah.
Yeah, and then I think third round in Roland Garros. So there was maybe some chance, but I definitely think on the grass, maybe if she puts her mind to it, that could be some place where she could get a few more points and matches going. The drop shots from Samsonova, that is a part of her game that was working really well in both all three of her runs last year. The year so far, though, for Ludmilla has really not gone according to plan. So maybe this is a win that'll, you know, spark some more confidence for her. And I guess so, because when she's on, I mean, she has one of the biggest forehands in the game. And the drop shot is big, and so is the serve. And, you know, she seems to be so hot and cold, though. Like, you just never know which version of her will show up.
And even in a match, I mean, she was 6-2 love up. She was 6-4 up. She plays a couple of horrible games to drop the second set. But yeah, the serve was actually kind of like a double-edged sword, even a lot of this match for her. But I think she did come out with a game plan. I think she did sort of instantly spot which sort of balls Osaka was having issues with. And then the addition of that third, of that drop shot in the third set kind of won her the match. So yeah, it was smart to start going for it so much. As you said, it is in her game. Like, she doesn't often maybe go for, well, I mean, often she uses it sometimes, yes, but here it was like specifically, you know, done because she saw that Osaka was basically lost anytime that drop shot came in. And yeah, I mean, she knew she didn't need to like execute it 100% either. It's more important to just find the right moment and play it, you know, semi well, and probably Osaka isn't going to get there. So it's obviously a very important win for her too. And she actually hadn't won in 2 months as well.
Hmm. Yeah, and she plays Madison Keys next, which I guess is a rematch of US Open third round, won by Keys in 3 sets. So yeah, similar type of streakier players there. But
yeah, Maddie seems to be a little more reliable, like just a little bit.
This is her third event back from, no, fourth actually, because she played in Indian Wells as well. Because I remember she missed some time this year because of an injury, so she didn't play Australia, and March.
Miami third round, and then she played Charleston, losing to Christian in the second round. I just think that Maddie has a bit more regulation, but I think she would have liked to play Osaka. Like, if Keys was playing Osaka, I would be very sort of confident about Madison's chances. Keys Samsonova, as you said, it's just like another one of these big hitting contests. And honestly, after Osaka Samsonova, I don't know if I feel like watching Keys Samsonova.
Fair, yeah. You'll probably see a lot of errors and a lot of winners. And you just, yeah. It'll be one of those. But I guess some match that did have good contrast of style, Leila Fernandez against Anastasia Potapova. You know, that's a good result for the Canadian, obviously. She was down in this match, I think. I think she was down double break in the first set even. And it really looked not good for her in that opening set. And she managed to turn it around and really just kind of won the second set pretty decisively as well. So that should give her quite a lot of confidence, because she plays Jabeur next. And, you know, that is definitely a match people are going to watch.
Yeah, Jabeur stopped that dream of Schmidlova and Klein winning Madrid. But no, I mean, she's definitely still vulnerable. I think Potapova as well has been a very frustrating player to follow, because there was a moment recently where we were basically thinking that she could be one of the next top 10 debutants alongside Zheng, and you know, look where Kinven is right now, and look where Potapova is. Basically, she hasn't progressed one bit.
One good result this year, right? Indian Wells, she did get to the quarters there and beat Paulini, but like apart from that, no, hasn't been
maybe a bit unlucky to run into the legend Daniel Collins in Miami second round, but then again, I mean, she doesn't even threaten her. So, yeah, it's been a little disappointing. But all in all, like, Fernandez Potapova is a very evenly matched contest, obviously. Like, even if you look at the rankings, I mean, Leila is 32nd seeded and she's 35th, right? And Potapova is 39th. So, basically, this was one of the most even matches you can get in the second round here. And, well, Leila ends up taking it. But it had to be, like, you know, some fireworks at least from these two, I think. So not many seeds actually that lost today, right? On the women's, now that I'm thinking about it. I mean, Kudermetova, obviously. And
Keeps a really good streak going, you know? That should be a streak people are paying attention to, because she qualified, and before that she won 2 Billie Jean Cup matches, and before that she also won the Challenger in Spain. Where was that, like, Lebisbo something? I don't know how to pronounce it, but she ended up winning that.
Maria Carla, or?
Yeah, Maria Carla.
She won Lebisbo.
So yeah, this is 2 straight set wins, and actually she is maybe, you know, quite good on the surface, pretty crafty. I like her variety. She has a good slice. I think I didn't see the match against Kudermetova, but that's a very good win. That is also a match that I thought was kind of 50-50. I didn't think that Kudermetova was a big favorite.
Yeah, she seems lost at the moment. Who is Carla playing next, though?
I think she is playing against Ostapenko.
Okay. I mean, that's kind of similar.
That's like, also, you know.
Of course, she might just get double bageled, but like, there is also that possibility that Maria Carla will just be pulling through the draw, playing all these big hitters and, yeah, just getting the errors out of them.
Yeah. I mean, Ostapenko hasn't been reliable at all since February. Or since the start of Indian Wells, really. And since those Azarenka matches.
Azarenka killed her season. Although, obviously, for a moment, Ostapenko was like 14-0 against players not named Azarenka. So.
This kind of happens to Ostapenko. She gets around 10 or 11 or 12 in the world, and then she just... She just falters ever so little bit, but then obviously there's a moment that she can just strike again and be back.
But remember that if those matches weren't played at the Pigeon King Cup, they would have looked similar. They would have looked different. Oh, you're right, Swarna. Mertens was also seeded. I forgot about this because I was assuming that Sloane was seeded. You're right. But because, of course, in their case, they are also super close to each other in the rankings. 29 Mertens, 33 Stevens. So I guess three seeds lost, all in all. Svitolina, Mertens, and Kudermetova.
Right. I guess that is pretty much it in terms of notable ones. I mean, yeah, Sara Errani's heroics didn't continue today. She ran into Hadad Maia, who's, I think, also actually very much looking for needed form because, yeah, ever since, I think, Abu Dhabi, that semifinal that she played against Kazakina, she has been losing a lot of matches, more so than I think we were hoping, especially after she had won the WTA Elite Trophy last year.
Yeah, I don't know if I was ever expecting her to be more consistent, to be honest. Like, that just doesn't seem to be like her. But Errani really didn't stand a chance against her today. Even the first set, it was like 5-love, and it was 5-love and 15 minutes or something like that. Then, of course, in true Sara Errani fashion, she kept fighting and she got a few on the board, but it was never really a match today. Yeah.
Yeah. And she takes on Emma Navarro next. And a good opportunity for the American. I think she could go into that one as a slight favorite, actually.
So, I'm trying to think if I've ever seen Emma Navarro play on clay. And I mean clay, not Charleston.
No, I've only seen her play on Charleston clay. I've yet to see a match of hers, Red Dirt. But this one against Hadad Maia, maybe, is a good opportunity for her.
Well, she did have some good results, actually, on red clay. Yes, last year. Quarterfinals in Palermo, final in Bostad.
I did not see any of those matches, but yes.
Maybe I did. I don't remember, but maybe I did. But yeah, I mean, she seems to have quite a lot of experience, actually. Won a huge ITF in Liepaja years back. Yeah, it doesn't seem like she's as much of a rookie as I thought on red clay.
Right. So now, yeah, if she plays Sakkari, I really want to see that. Either Sakkari or Stevens. That would be fun.
Do I take ITF title winners seriously? Depends on the strength of the draw. I mean, obviously on the women's side, you've got 100K ITFs, for example, which can sometimes be extreme. So, yeah, in some cases.
I guess let's look a little bit ahead to tomorrow as we try to wrap this one up.
There was also this question, sorry, with Elon, but yeah, we should be getting to the preview by now, yeah. Can you guys see Ostapenko making it to the WTA finals this year? But where is she now in the WTA race? And my guess is probably not that close.
Like 10 or 11, let me see.
Yeah, it would be still doable, right? But...
She's actually
number 8. Yeah, it's super close there between, like, let's say the first 18 players, even like from her to like number 17, it's 500 points. So basically one lucky run, or like not even lucky, you know, one huge run she gets and she might be in a very good position. That's kind of my answer. Like, it will depend on how strong her peaks are, probably, rather than her consistency, because last year she didn't make it probably more based on that she didn't have like any crazy peaks, even though she was actually much more consistent than in previous years.
Yeah, and she had a couple of slam results and a Rome semifinal, and so put her pretty close.
Yeah, this year like she a thousand somewhere, and she becomes a massive contender for this.
Yeah. But looking at the matches tomorrow for the women's side, there's really one standout match for me that is a must watch, and it sucks that it's at 2 a.m. my time, but this is absolutely one that I have. Can you guess which one it is?
What's 2 a.m. For you? I should know. It's 11. Okay, so actually that first slot is unbelievable. And there are a lot of matches there that I want to watch. In fact, Marożan Seruntolo, Musetti Sejbov-Wild, Paul Klein. Mm-hmm. There's also Andreeva Noskova.
So that was the one, because I was looking at just the women's
Which
side.
One? Okay, Andreeva Noskova. That's what I was going to guess. I was also thinking of Paul Klein, but that's what I was going to guess. But these four are amazing. Like, I have no clue which one I want to watch. I mean, all of them, really.
Hmm. Yeah. But on the women's side, yeah. I mean, like, that is the go-to one for me tomorrow. Also, Lynette Sabalenka, I'm just a little intrigued, even though, you know, Sabalenka technically, a big favorite, but you know, Sabalenka since Australian Open 4-4, Lynette, you know, showed some good form last weekend. Ruan getting to the final there, and also Sabalenka, she either loses first round or wins the title. That's her record so far: 5 appearances, 3 first round losses, 2 titles. So,
in Madrid, all right.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this year, and I was like, what? no. Okay, Madrid, yeah. I don't think she can lose to Lynette, really. She's dominated this match up in the past. And...
like, isn't it 3-0 their head-to-head? Yeah, they've not had really any close.
Don't see what Magda hurts her with, really. I mean, obviously she can redirect the ball pretty well, but like Sabalenka just has too much of it, I suppose. Yeah, that slate, you know, on Manolo Santana is just not that exciting to me because, well, you've gotten probably an easy match for Rybakina, probably an easy match for Sabalenka, and probably an easy match for Alcaraz. Although at least with Alcaraz, there is some intrigue because, you know, it's the first match on clay he's going to play. It's the first match since the injury. So,
yeah, I think there's quite a bit of intrigue, actually. And also Shevchenko likes these conditions, right? He won a challenger in Madrid last year. You know,
over Pedro Kachin in the final.
Pushed Medvedev. It is Medvedev in Madrid, but I still put a little bit of stock in it because, you know, Medvedev last year was pretty decent apart from Roland Garros. So,
it was a good match from him, yeah. He could use a run, but I just don't think he can beat Alcaraz realistically.
Yeah.
Well, if Alcaraz is playing at a decent level. Who is a better player, Kalinskaya or Samsonova? What does a better player even mean?
Yeah,
that's hard to say. Their peak games might be similar.
They're in the same kind of tier for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to compare them, actually. We could do it in many different ways. And then we go into that, like, what does the better player mean, actually? But they're pretty close, definitely.
But there's a lot of good men's matches tomorrow. Echeverry Shapovalov is one that I have circled. Navone versus Runa. That is one that I'm very interested in.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, Musetti Sejbov-Wilsch as well. Yes, for that one.
2018 US Open Junior Final.
Mm-hmm. And Fies Altmaier. They seem to be running into each other a lot, but that's still very interesting.
Well, Hurkacz Draper, the rivalry that never ends either. Yeah. And their matches never end. Shankar-Chukina is also a rematch for
Draper Hurkacz.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Shank Davidovich Fokina is a rematch for Miami, and it's actually the last match that Davidovich Fokina won. And it's just another one of these Shank matchups where, like, you get a lot of questionable shot selection and ridiculous shot making at the same time. So it should be good. And as you said, the early ones: Marożan Seruntolo, Musetti Sejbov-Wild. Klein totally slapping Tommy Paul. Yes, that's something I'm going to be watching too.
I don't know about totally slapping, but...
No, I'm joking. A little bit at least. But he has a very fine chance to win. Yeah.
How about Bagnes Rublev? Is that because Rublev 4-match losing streak? This is a winnable. This he should win this, right?
I don't want to watch it. Like, I'm not going to. There's too many good matches around. But if he loses it, yeah, it's going to be pretty brutal. Bagni's in great form this year, but still.
And then, yeah, Shang Fokina. Yeah, that is. I mean, Fokina last year, did he do something in Madrid? He beat Runa.
He beat Runa in the first round.
That's a tie break, yeah.
It lost but to whoever, actually, I don't remember. But
yeah. Also, Marojan, he should beat Cerundo. He should, right? But also, you never know with Fran.
I don't know. Should is a strong word in this case, I think.
Is he the favorite? I think he's the favorite. No, actually,
I think he's a slight favorite.
He's a slight favorite.
Yeah,
slight favorite sounds right. They played an Australian Open this year, right? And it was Marojan who won it.
Yes, it was straights. Easy for Fabi. He won in straights. The first set was a tiebreak and then 6-4, 6-2, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I saw this tweet from Perskerkaru.
I didn't, but, you know, it's good. Andrea Perskerkaru is a good character.
It's her mind. Čorić and Zverev, they have a 3-3 head-to-head.
But do you want to watch it?
No, I don't want to watch it. No,
I wanna know the result, but I don't want to watch.
Those forehands are not, you know, super watchable when they play against each other. Remember that U.S. Open quarterfinal they played?
Obviously.
Yeah.
And John is like really harsh on Čorić Hasan from yesterday. I mean, he just keeps talking about it, that it was horrible, that it was the worst match that he's ever seen, that it was even worse than his performance on return against me. And I don't know. I didn't see a ball from that, but it doesn't sound good. I mean, Čorić Hasan, it doesn't sound amazing.
Čorić.
That was your words, John. That was that you said after the match, right? That you usually return much better. So I wasn't talking about my feelings. That was your words.
It's like those people on Twitter that were like, you know, even I could have done better than Darwin Blanche today.
Yeah, I don't think so, but Darwin Blanche certainly would not win against 99% of the players in this draw. So,
but
Munar against Struff, is that a thing? Maybe. I mean, last year's runner-up against home crowd player who does like the conditions too a fair bit. I mean, last year obviously the fourth round was it from Munar?
He got that far in Madrid last year,
didn't he? He beat Arnaldi in the third round, I think.
Oh, okay, yeah, he had that contentious match with
Kokkinakis, yeah, in the first one. Yeah. I don't think he beat anyone spectacular there, but okay. He was definitely pretty deep. He definitely went pretty deep.
I would love to see some kind of a run from Sebastian Baez during the European swing, because in order for him to really become that, you know, Diego Schwartzman, fill that prototype, he's got to go on a run somewhere in these big tournaments, you know, because he's just killing it in South America. But
I forgot about this match. Yeah, he's just probably going to play Fritz in the third round and get absolutely wrecked again.
It was a horrible matchup for him, but yeah. Yeah, Fritz, I mean, he still has to beat Dardiri. That is not going to be that easy.
No. Yeah. I mean, neither of them is really, like, guaranteed into the third round. I was just sort of thinking about that matchup and how easy it's been. And, and on the women's, Andreeva Onoshkova, you already said, that's definitely a great clash. Andreeva kind of desperate to get another big run after Madrid last year was such a nice.
You have a prediction for that one? Who is going to win? I saw that, like, you know, Andreeva is a 55-45 favorite. But
I'd second that.
Noshkova can. I think Noshkova won their last match in Brisbane. It was like a tightish two-setter. At least the first set was pretty tight.
Yeah, I just think maybe Mira is a little bit more reliable, but yeah, it's very hard. It's very hard to say. I remember that the match you mentioned, because in Brisbane, Mira was like an 80-20 favorite for the bookies or something like that, which was insane. Yeah,
that is insane. No, it should never be that one-sided.
It shouldn't, yes. But at the time, Mira was like still perceived, at least by the market, as like some sort of unstoppable force.
Yeah.
But I think her game is a bit more repeatable, but she didn't exactly scream confidence to me when she beat Taylor Townsend. There was a lot of nerves in that one, and
she was feeling it.
She was feeling it. You know, she knows she needs a run, and she was feeling it. So I don't know. That's definitely the standout on the women's. Like the whole set actually doesn't look that.
No, that's good the only one that I'm really like. That's the one that I really want to watch, but it's too bad that.
Zhang Putintseva, maybe. I'm just thinking which of the high seeds have a tough matchup, and like it's mostly Zhang, really. Because otherwise, yeah, I mean, we'll see if Daniel Collins. Actually, every single match of Daniel Collins this event is very important because John said that Daniel Collins is not going to win Madrid, and now I really want that prediction to fail, and I'm going to want Daniel Collins to get there. And once again, he's
well. I want to see Collins and Sabalenka. I really want to see that fourth round. I hope we get it.
Do they have like a rivalry? I have no idea how they've done against one another.
So. I want to say it's like 4-0 for Collins, for Sabalenka.
Okay, I was gonna be a little shocked when you said 4-0 for Collins, and I was gonna say, "Wow, that's insane!" But well.
No, it's not. It's not like the Vekic Sabalenka.
Yeah, it is 4-0 indeed. US Open, she took a set. Wuhan and US Open, she didn't take a set. And US Open, she took a set. So three matches at the US Open.
Yeah, I mean, okay, wait. I guess Garcia is in danger, but she's always in danger.
Yeah, that's not really like that's regardless of the opponent. I mean, all due respect to Xinyu Wang, but like you could have anyone there. You could have Yafan Wang there. You could have Ziyu Wang. I'm running out of Wangs. Qiang Wang, who's currently playing in a high profile ITF.
Just Shelby Rogers. Shelby Rogers against Wondrousova.
Shelby Rogers, one of the best players without a title, right? So maybe she's gonna do a Jan Lennart Struff.
Maybe. Similar kind of age, I think, right?
Probably, yeah. I think Shelby might be a little younger, right?
Yeah, she's 31 right now, so.
Yeah. Struff famously turned. Now it's 2 minutes past midnight for me. So yesterday, 2 minutes ago, for me at least, was Jan Lennart Struff's birthday. So happy birthday to you, Struffy. I think you gave yourself the best present already, so we didn't prepare a gift, but obviously Munich was your birthday gift. So nicely done. And it's really hard for me to find anything else like that stands out and I really want to watch it. I think there's a high chance that tomorrow of the WTA side, I'm going to watch Andreia Vanoshkova. And after that, probably Putintseva Zheng as well, and that might be it, unless there's something crazy happening and I don't know, Linette is up a set on Sabalenka and you gotta turn it on.
Maybe Kostyuk Sharif. I don't really see any upset there, but you never know.
Basel said that Mayer Sharif is gonna make it into the second week, I think.
Wait, actually, Sharif had a very good run last year, didn't he? Didn't she?
She did.
Got to the quarters.
Quarters, yes.
And took a set off of Sabalenka.
Yes. That was a horrible set that Arina played, but yes.
Yeah.
It was like 6-2, right? In the opener.
It was. So? I don't know.
I don't think Kostyuk is particularly unbeatable. Like I think she definitely is vulnerable to upsets. So
And of course she could play Sabalenka again in the next match. Or sorry, in Rybakina. Which this is one of those players that can rush her, especially on the forehand side.
But yeah, I guess that's more or less it. Once again we are more excited about the men's? Is it because we are men? Is it because we watch more men's? Is it because men's tennis is more logical, as Arina Sabalenka says?
Yeah.
I don't know. But it is what it is. However, Andreeva Noshkova might just be the match of the day on both the ATP and the WTA side. So at least we have that.
Yeah. I mean, tennis is tennis. Some days women's side is more interesting. Some days men's side is more interesting. It's just...
And if Bronzetti defeats Rybakina, then it will get interesting. It will get spicy then. That's for sure. I don't know if I quite believe it, but it would be like the upset of the year so far. Maybe.
Probably. I can't think of one, but yeah.
But yeah, we can't wait for tomorrow. Jerry Shank to win in 5 hours against Alejandro Davidovich Fokina. Lucas Klein to completely destroy Tommy Paul. Lucia Bronzetti to beat Elena Rybakina and stuff. Everything will be happening. And I guess we are going to close off the show now. And yeah, thank you, Vansh. Thank you to everyone in the chat. Alex says he can't wait for Andreeva Noskova as well. So that's going to be in 11 hours from now. Are you waking up at 2 a.m., Punch?
We'll see. In that case, I might as well just stay up. I mean,
Might stay up, yeah.
Yeah. We'll see. If not, I'm definitely going to wake up and catch up on it.
You poor guy. I mean, in this time zone, it's actually really hard to watch all of these European events.
Yeah. It is a bit rough, but it gets a little better during the second week, especially of the Masters and also Roland Garros. And it's kind of a weird one because when I'm up, then there's still a lot happening, but sometimes the most interesting matches they put in the day, and then those are done by the time I'm awake. So, yeah.
I mean, yeah, tomorrow it's like 11 a.m. is everything I want to watch is at 11 a.m.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess that's going to be it indeed. Thank you again to everyone in the chat. Thank you, Vansh. Thank you to our producer. And we'll see you guys tomorrow on some streams that the channel is going to have. And subscribe. As you can see, we are very close to 8K. I don't think anyone subscribed during this video, or really anyone subscribed today. But we are close to 8K. And at some point during Madrid, I would expect us to get there. So. You know what to do.
Ready? Play.
I want one more thing from you, Francesca. Can you look at the camera? And I want you to say, I am Francesca Giorgi, and I am a friend of the show. Can you try it?
I am Francesca Giorgi, and I'm a friend... Wait.
Go. It's okay.
I'm Francisca George, and I'm a fan of the show.
One more time. Can you say, I'm a friend of the show?
Friend.
Like amigo.
Friend. Friend.
So, because we joke, we have players come on all the time. They have no idea, but after they've been on, we say, oh, Yelena Ostapenko is a friend of the show. She has no idea. But so if we get you to say, I am Francisca George, or how you say your name, and I'm a friend of the show.
I am Francisca George, and I'm a friend of the show.
Perfect.
Thanks. Just want you to do me one more thing. I want you to hold the microphone. I want you to look in the... Don't be nervous. I mean, listen, you've just beaten Elaine Ostapenko.
I'm not nervous.
No, you shouldn't be. If you can beat Ostapenko twice in one day, you can do this for sure. I want you to look at the camera and just say, hi, my name is... Say your name and then say, and I'm a friend of the show.
Friend of the show?
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, my name is Susan and I'm a friend of the show.
Say your whole name for me. That's the only thing I want.
Sorry.
Surname too. No, you're doing great.
You're cutting,
great.
Huh?
Yeah, oh, I'll cut it up. Don't worry. Yeah, yeah.
Hi, my name is Susan Lehmans, and I'm a friend of the show.
Cool. Thank you very much, Susan.
You're welcome.
Good luck for the rest of the tournament.
Thank you.
And I will tag you on Instagram, and you can reject. I do have one more tiny thing, which is I want you to look into the camera.
Yeah.
I want you to say your name.
Yes.
And I want you to say, I am a friend of the show.
I'm a friend of the show. Okay.
Perfect, yeah.
My name is Zeynep Sönmez, and I'm a friend of the show.
Boom.
Yes. Okay. Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed this video, make sure you hit that like button. Don't forget to subscribe and click that notification bell so you don't miss out on all things tennis.
Sports Social Podcast Network.